dealing with the three specific efforts to undermine the work of God in Nehemiah chapter 6. In the previous chapters, Sanballat and Tobiah and others, they try brute force, but that doesn't work. And so we're getting insight into the efforts of the enemy to try to undermine the work of God. And what the enemies do in Nehemiah chapter 6, the enemy is still doing today. And so in verse 1, "Now it came to pass when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arabian and the rest of our enemies heard that I had builded the wall and that there was no breach left therein, though at that time I had not set up the doors upon the gates, so they are obviously not able to stop the work, that Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, Come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono." Not Yoko, the plain. See, y'all didn't find that funny, but I thought it was funny. There is. By the way, I told y'all last week that there's a Hawaiian place, barbecue place called Ono. I heard somebody talk about it this past week. I'm like, see, I told our people and they didn't believe me. No, you may have believed me. I just acting like a victim. So anyway. But they thought to do me mischief. Okay, so Nehemiah's discerning. Just real quick, give me a moment to remind you of this. If the enemy can't force you into stopping, what's one method he'll use? This was the method last week. He'll try to distract you. Hey, come down. Just stop what you're doing. Come do a little more. Go play a little more. Go pursue that. Go have this. And those things can even not be bad things in and of themselves. Sometimes they can be old wounds, grievances, frustrations. But it's a distraction from the work that God is trying to do in your life. Don't come down. And so Nehemiah was discerning about that. And they don't stop in verse 4. They send four more times. So then in verse 5, our text for tonight, "Then sent Sanballat his servant unto me in like manner the fifth time with an open letter in his hand." Now, you should think, okay, the first four times they sent a messenger to me is a private message. But now they have sent an open letter wherein was written, "It is reported among the heathen, and that Gashmu saith it, that thou and the Jews think to rebel, for which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king, according to these words. And thou hast also appointed prophets to preach of thee at Jerusalem, saying, There is a king in Judah. And now shall it be reported to the king according to these words. Come now, therefore, and let us take counsel together." He's saying, we're going to tell Daddy. I'm going to tell Dad. You ever heard that? You ever been guilty of saying that? I'm telling Mom. "Then I sent unto him, saying, There are no such things done as thou sayest, but thou feignest them out of thine own heart, for they all made us afraid, saying, Their hands shall be weakened from the work, that it be not done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands." Father, sure do want to be a help tonight, and God, I've already asked you to help me in this. I want my spirit to be right. I have a particular passion and a flaw, Lord, in my own life. And I think we all have susceptibility to this. And so, God, I pray that you'd help us to learn from this and that we would be protected and that we would help to and for you, there is going to be an opposition that tries to undermine that work. And listen, it's No. And you've got to learn how to combat the enemy's efforts to undermine the work of God in your life in whatever forms they come, over and over and over again. And look, it's true. We get weary battling, don't we? We get weary being tired. We get weary with difficulty. We get weary with the challenges that can come our way, trying to undermine the work of God. But that is a part of life. If you want God to work, there will be an enemy opposing that work. And so we have to be aware. We have to be engaged. We have to be wise to the efforts of the enemy to destroy what God is trying to do. And look, I know it's a Wednesday night, but we got to have some energy and we got to be vigilant, because Satan hates what's going on at churches like West Valley. And Satan hates the work that God is doing in your life. And if you feel like, man, I am growing in this season of my life, and it feels like to me, and it seems like God is helping me to make progress, and it seems like there might be some things that God would do now and that God would do with me in the future, you got to understand there is an enemy who actively hates that and opposes it and has an insatiable desire, an unsatisfiable desire to undermine that work in your life. And he will not sit idly by. He is the prince of the power of the air. He is the God of this world. And he has much resource at his disposal. And he will seek to prevent God's work from advancing in your life. So you got to take it seriously. This isn't just a lesson for pastors and leaders and a few select people. If you're a young person in whom God is working, Satan is trying to undermine it. If you're a young couple, if you're a single adult, if you are retired, if your marriage is struggling, if you're going through loss or sickness, or if you're enjoying an abundance in your life right now, it doesn't matter where you're at. Satan wants to undermine the work of God in your life. He'll try to distract you. Tonight we look at a slimy approach. You've heard the quote before, loose lips. Yeah, they do. The enemies, they couldn't stop Nehemiah through brute force. Then they tried to distract him. You know, the free throw thing. Yeah, waving signs, neon lights, a goat. Did everything they could to distract them, but that didn't work. So they tried a different approach. Sanballat sends his servant with an open letter, the implication being the servant read it in a very public and very dramatic manner. This was broadcast. Now, I hope you know this, but if you're not a Bible scholar, I'll enlighten you with some really deep insight. They didn't have social media then. And so if you were going to broadcast something, you just had to actually go out and say it. Today, you can just hide behind your computer screen in your mama's basement and say stuff about anybody and wreck people's lives and not actually have to be accountable for it. But in that day, if you're going to say something negative about somebody, you had to go stand up and look people in the face. And so they come out, and it's some kind of entourage. You know, last week we had CNN and Fox there. And so they're still there, by the way. And it's in the Hebrew, in between verse 5 and 6, CNN and Fox are in there. You say, how do you know that? I just do, trust me. No, I'm kidding. And they're there, and like, man, the servant, the ambassador of the esteemed Sanballat is on the scene, and he has some words to say, and man, they focus the cameras, and they zoom in, and they get the microphones out, and they're there, and he reads this letter, and let me sum it up for you. You are doing this work to rebel. Your goal is not to do a work that the king has sent you on. Your goal is to do a work that is going to empower you. You see, the truth, Nehemiah, is that what's really motivating you is not the welfare of the people. What's motivating you is that you want power for yourself and you want to be the king. And we're going to let everybody know what your true agenda is. We're going to let everybody know that you have a desire to be in power, and that really, after using the king's resources to rebuild this wall, you are going to make yourself king. In fact, you have employed prophets that are going around. They are preaching that you should be followed and that they no longer need to be loyal to the actual king, that they need to be loyal to you. And so you're leading this false religious revolt. And we're going to let the world know, and we're going to let the king know what's going on. Now, that would cause some anxiety, and we know that it does in verse number 9. They all made us afraid because the kings of that day had ultimate power. You didn't have a legal system that you had to work through. And we even know in our country, leaders will subvert the legal system sometimes, as a true statement, for their own agenda, their own gain. But in that day, there wasn't even the pretense of a legal system. I want you dead, you'll be dead. So this was, and there were people that had been killed and severely punished for leading oppositions to kingdoms. Just go into the book of Jeremiah, the end of Jeremiah, and read about what happened to Zedekiah. God told Jeremiah, tell Zedekiah to submit to the king of Babylon. I'll use that to protect him. I will bless you even in captivity. And Zedekiah wouldn't. Eventually, Zedekiah was captured. His sons were killed in front of his face. And then his eyes were put out. And he spent the rest of his days as a blind father to killed children in a foreign prison cell. And that's how he died. What are you saying? That this was a serious accusation that they were leveraging against him. This is slimy behavior, and we call this slimy behavior slander. Here's what the definition is. The utterance of false charges or misrepresentations which defame and damage another's reputation. Let me tell you some things we know about slander. We know from Proverbs 6, verse 16 through 19, that slander is a sin. Please try to stay engaged. Slander is a sin that God hates. If you don't know what Proverbs 6 says, these 6 things doth the Lord hate. Yea, 7 are an abomination to him. Oh, I know what they're going to be. Do you? A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, sweet feet that be swift and running to evil, and he that soweth discord among the brethren. No. So we have our buttons that we want to push in churches like this. But God actually hates other things that he says in the lives of... No, I hate these things. And I hate them when they're present in the lives of my children. Slander is seductive. What do you mean by that? People get sucked into slander all the time. Proverbs 16:28, a froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. You know what that means? People that have a deep bond can be separated by a slanderous tongue because men and women won't guard their hearts against the salaciousness and sliminess of slander. People just go off and say stuff and be like, well, they said it. Slander is destructive. It's destructive. Proverbs 17:8, the words of a talebearer are as wounds. They go down into the innermost parts of the belly. What does slander look like? Well, you can be falsely accused of something that you're not guilty of. People can slander your motive. I know why you're doing that. I know why you didn't do that. I'm watching. I know what's in your heart. I tell you what I'm going to do. The slander of God's work and God's people, and you guys, this isn't like, man, this really feels good. You've got to be aware of it. The slander of God's work and God's people is only going to increase as times get worse and God's work continues to advance. Now look, there's some optimism in there. Jesus said, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. That is, I believe, if I'm wrong, I will apologize for this, but that is an offensive statement. Jesus never wanted his people to be in retreat. We are advancing You're like, well, we got all these political things and all this crazy social stuff going on and all this confusion about biology. Oh, no, no. The work of God can move forward because Jesus said, not even the gates of hell can stop it. We're just going to keep moving forward. But the Bible that says that also says this, that in the last days, evil men will wax worse and worse, and people will heap to themselves teachers having itching ears, and they're going to be those who allow themselves to be used as tools of the enemy to undermine the work of God. And one of their chief weapons and methods is to slander the work of God, slander the people of God, slander the leader of God's people, slander the motive of God's people. They will be slimy snakes trying to undermine the work of God. So here's a fact, and I'm giving you the statement. I can tell you're waiting with bated breath. You can't stop the slanderer. There's not a way. Can't stop the slanderer. You do remember that there were people who slandered Jesus, right? And if people slandered him, we who follow him but are imperfect, we are going to be slandered. You can't stop the slanderer. So here's the statement. You can't stop people from talking, but you don't have to let people talk and stop you. You can't stop people from talking, but you don't have to let people talking stop you. So this is what we want to look at. I'm going to give you four things. How do you subdue the slander in your life? Now, I'm not saying how do you subdue the slanderer, because you can't stop people from talking. I can't stop people from posting. I can't stop people from saying whatever they're going to say at other churches or to people in this church. I can't stop you from saying whatever you're going to say in your home. Nobody can stop anybody from talking. But here's what I can do. I can subdue the effect of the slander in my own life. Do you get it? No, I can't stop people from talking, but I don't have to let people talking stop me. So what did Nehemiah do? Number one, and these are alliterated because I love Brother Z and want to irritate Brother Fiovi. Stop it. All right. Number one, there must be bold confrontation of the slanderer. No, look, Jesus did not defend himself, but he did defend God's work and God's people. No, I love this, watching my dad. My dad is an amazing man. I love this about him. I was talking to him today, and I told him one of my favorite things about him was listening to him pray for his family. I love praying with my dad and listening to him pray for his grandkids. My brother, my sister, sometimes he remembers to pray for me, but he's kind of getting old, and so he forgets. I'm just kidding. Here's another favorite thing. Get it? That I watched him growing up in a ministry home. I watched him get personally attacked more than one time, and I just watched him take it. But when he would bow up in a righteous way, is when you started attacking his wife and his kids. Or when you started attacking the work of God in the lives of other people, started attacking the church. No, it's one thing. You know, Jesus was silent at times. But when God's people were at stake and when the sheep of the master were at stake, Jesus, without hesitation, came to their defense. Paul would say this, and you can look in epistles. If when people attacked him, he's like, whatever, throw me in jail. As long as the name of Jesus Christ is advanced, I'm good with that. But you start messing with churches that Paul planted. You start messing with believers that Paul loved. Paul was going to come out swinging to defend the work of God's people. And there is a time and a place when before God, the slanderer must be boldly confronted. And what did Nehemiah do? Basically this. He says this, what you're saying isn't true. Look at verse 8. There are no such things done as thou sayest. You know what he's saying? You are a liar. Look, sometimes people's feelings don't matter. And just because the Constitution guarantees freedom of speech doesn't mean that you have the right to run around saying whatever you want about people and then not have any consequences for it. No, do I? Okay, legally, you have the right. Sure, say whatever you want to say. But there are consequences when you start saying things about people that are not true. And especially when those things are destructive. And sometimes somebody's got to stand up and say, no, what you're saying is not true. You are, in fact, a liar. Number two, this is implied more than stated, but you can't prove what you're saying. No, you know what Nehemiah had? Documentation of the king's order. Documentation of the king's provision of resources. Nehemiah had documentation validating what he was doing. Then this joker shows up with some kind of made-up letter making these accusations, but there was no evidence of the accusation. You know what there just was? Claims. Claims and proof are not the same thing. Number two, there must be the comfort of the Savior for the slandered. I love how Nehemiah, the second thing that he did. Look at verse 9. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. It's amazing how many times Nehemiah prayed in the middle of stuff in Nehemiah. You know, the king says, what do you want? O God, help me. Remember we taught, I don't expect you to remember this, but it's like God set the ball on the tee. And Nehemiah was like, I got to swing. Help me not to miss it. Help me to ask for the right thing in the right way. Like, God, help me. I love the accessibility that we have to him. God, help me to have wisdom. God, help me to know the right thing. God, help me not to overreact. God, help me to be sensitive to your Holy Spirit. And he just goes to God, God, you know what this dude is saying is not true. God, help me. God, strengthen us. God, protect us. God, rescue us. Look, sometimes the first thing we want to do is run to everybody else, but we got to learn when we're dealing with slander or any kind of opposition, our greatest ally is God. No, I thank God that he is not my only ally, but he is my greatest ally. No, I thank God for a church family that loves me. I thank God, if I'm going to talk about human allies, the one that I should talk about the most is my wife sitting back there, who for 22 years, look, I'm trying to do math on the fly, it's hard. For 22 years has been the best ally a husband could want. I thank God for that. But my greatest ally are not my friends, not my church family, not even my wife. My greatest ally is my God. And look, if you know that you're right, then you need to trust that God knows that you're right. And you got to learn how to allow yourself to be comforted by the God who knows the truth. You got to be okay with the fact that God has allowed the slander, but he still is aware of where you're at, what you are doing, what you're not doing, what your motive is and what it's not. And you've got to be okay with the fact that he allowed it, and you got to be okay with the fact that he can take care of you in it and that his work isn't going to be stopped because of it. There was a point in the not too distant past when I made this statement to Andrea. I don't know that I'm going to survive this. You say, what happened? Slanderer. Accusations. No proof. You know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. Like, why would you bring that up? Because it happens. And if you think that's the only time something's going to happen in your life or in the life of this church, you don't know the deviousness and the depths of how evil the enemy is. No, not people. People get used. No, the real enemy who stirs that stuff up and deceives people and motivates them. And you know what I had to learn in that? That God's going to take care of me. even when people don't believe me, even when people have questions about me, even when there's uncertainty and there's anxiety and there's fear, God will take care of the slandered. So in your family, when people are saying stuff about you, you got to trust that God is going to take care of you. At your job, when there is slander that comes your way, in the different seasons of life where there can be accusations levied against you, God will take care of you. Number three, there must be commitment to the service through the slander. I love what Nehemiah says at the end of his prayer. And it was a total of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 words. This wasn't the only prayer he prayed about this, but this sums up the prayer. This is what he says. He doesn't say, hey, God, make these voices stop. Not at that. I mean, he wanted them to, but that's not. That wasn't the main thing in this particular prayer. It wasn't get even with them. By the way, God's not going to bless a vengeful spirit. Yeah, I should have said more about that. And if I'm comforted by God, I'm not looking for vengeance. I'm okay just letting God handle that. Pray for the people and just keep moving on. I love what Nehemiah prays for. Strengthen our hands. What is that about? He's going to keep doing the work. Now, knowing that people are saying this about him, knowing that it might cause some anxiety among the people, knowing that it might dishearten the people, and he was concerned about that. Look at it in verse number 9. Their hands shall be weakened from the work that it be not done. They all made us afraid. No, he's aware that people could experience trepidation. He's aware that this could be a discouragement. He's aware that some people could come to him and say, Nehemiah, if this is really what's going on, I don't want my family being at risk. We left a pretty cushy situation to make a sacrifice to follow you. And if you've put us in jeopardy, I don't want to be putting my life and my family's life in this kind of risk. I don't want us to be suffering unnecessarily. No, he was aware. Nehemiah was aware that this could affect the people of God and their hearts and their focus and their thoughts about him. And yet his prayer was this: God, strengthen my hands. God, help me to just keep building stone after stone. God, help me to keep encouraging your people. God, help me to keep busy about what you called me to do. I can't control what people say, but here's what I can control. I can keep praying for your people. I can keep visiting them. I can keep preaching. I can keep helping church planters and helping missions. And I can keep loving you. And I can keep praising you. And I can keep trying to do the work that you called me to do. God, strengthen my hands. You can't stop the slanderer, but you can stay committed to the work. Keep being the right kind of husband. Keep being a pure single. Keep being the right kind of wife. Keep being the right kind of young person at school. Hey, look, it happens at school. You try to have any kind of conviction in a school, public, Christian, private, whatever. Sometimes in my house, even in homeschool. You think homeschool insulates you from that? Like, I'm just trying to do right. Oh, you just think you're better than everybody else. No. And I understand why people chuckle at it, but it's a real thing you deal with. Like, you just think you're better. You go to college, you just think you're better than everybody. You go to work as a Christian and try to have any kind of conviction. Tell me that doesn't come out sometimes. Oh, well, you just think you're better than us. No, actually, I don't. In fact, I know I'm not better. But that's not going to stop them from trying to discourage and defame you and embarrass you and try to make you afraid of what's going to happen to you. And you've got to understand the necessity of being committed to just keep doing the work that God has put in your life. I think it was Paul Chappell that said this one time. He solves problems with tracts. What do you mean? You having problems? Go pass out some tracts and witness to some people. What are you talking about? Do the work. Last thing. There must be cover against the seduction of slander. Okay, here I really did have to stretch a little bit for the sake of alliteration. But what do you tie? It's here. I want you to notice what you didn't see here. you don't see. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying it's not recorded if it did happen. You don't see a massive revolt on the wall. People coming to Nehemiah demanding an answer. Look, you know what they already knew? We've already seen the letter. We've already seen the good hand of God upon him. We've already seen the evidence of God's work going forward. So just because somebody comes along and says something bad about him, we're not going to suddenly lose confidence in him because of an accusation that has no proof. If he's not doing anything different and he's not doing anything that is untrustworthy, and if the evidence of God working is still there and the evidence of God moving is still there and his message is the same and his life is the same, we're not going to bail on him just because somebody got mad and said something about him if there is no evidence and no proof of it. You know what that's called? Guarding your heart against the seductive nature of slander. Do you know why magazines that just talk bad about people sell and are so appealing? Because at our core, I'm not saying at their core, and you've got to get this tonight, at your core and at my core, we love juicy details, negative details about other people's lives. And bad news sells. Oh, another pastor did that. Oh, they did this. Oh, that happened. And we just... man, we crave it. And it takes an intentional work of God and submission on our parts to overcome that. So what are you talking about? Covering against the seduction of slander. You got to avoid spreading it, and you got to avoid being sucked into it. We live in a crazed age. I want to be careful here. I know factually that a lot of people have had really bad things happen to them. Okay? But we live in a culture, and I hope you can understand this, and I'm bringing it way down, and I hope you can think here for a minute. We live in a culture that has swung to the other extreme now, where people can just make any kind of accusation, and then people are guilty because someone accused them of something. And some of the, no, bad things have happened. I'm not minimizing anything that a legitimate victim has gone through. No, I have too much respect for my mom and the things that she's been through, and too much respect for the people in our church that I have put my own life on the line to protect and to help. I'm not trying to minimize that. But we live in a culture that thinks you can just say something about somebody, and then that automatically makes it true. And we run with it sometimes. And just like there are real victims of really, really bad behavior, there are also people that are victims of accusations that were never guilty of anything. And we ought to be just as passionate about guarding against that. That's how, I literally wrote this down this way. That's how I handle you. I'm going to give you an uncomfortable example of this. Not anybody's name. I'm just going to give you situations so that you understand how I try to be as a pastor. I have been approached at times by people saying to me, I saw such and such about so and so on social media. Here's how I've responded. You ready? Why are you talking to me? Why are you talking to me? You're not an adult. And look, you can spend your time chasing what other people do on social media. I'm not being ugly here. You don't have to like this, whatever. I'm not saying social media doesn't have its use. But I try to live my life in people's living rooms and in face-to-face conversations in my office. I got enough to deal with without chasing what everybody's doing on social media. No, if it's helpful information like somebody's sick, if it's helpful information like somebody has an emergency, I need to hear about that all day. But the kind of stuff that is just, we need to let you know what they're doing. Why are you talking to me? Because Jesus himself is very specific about this. Thank you. You got a problem with somebody else, go talk to them. And look, I ask God to help my spirit with this. I don't confuse my passion with anger or resentment, because it's not. But I love you, and I want to protect us. You saying, are you perfect? Did anybody hear that? No, not perfect. But we got to be willing to protect each other. Wait for it. I'm almost done. From ourselves. What do you mean? Don't be a person that people are comfortable talking negatively about other people to. Did that make sense? If you find yourself constantly being a dumping station for other people's negative stuff about other people, that's an indictment on you. Like, I don't know. No. If people are comfortable coming to you and complaining about your pastor, complaining about other members, that is an indictment on you. You know what I don't get a whole lot? People running to me complaining about other people. You know why? Because I've tried to make it a priority to shut it down. No, and I have shut it down. And this is what I say. Hey, stop talking to me and go talk to the people that you need to deal with. And I have too many evidences in my life where I've done that. And if we want to protect each other, we can't be dumping stations for people to come and complain. I'm telling you, the world is littered with people that used to be in church. And the world is littered with churches that used to be thriving because they allowed this kind of seductive slander to be permeated throughout the congregation. And pastors didn't stand up to it. Sometimes pastors contributed to it flowing around. And God's people would read the Bible and they would pray. And then they would go and they would post stuff and trash people instead of handling things biblically. Don't be a dumping station. Number two, don't be a contributor to it. So, I mean, spreading it. You know something about somebody? Can I tell you who to talk to? Talk to Jesus. You hear something and you're concerned about somebody? Talk to the person you're concerned about. I hope my spirit is not confusing tonight. I love you. So here's the statement. You can't stop people from talking, but you don't have to let the talking stop you. Here's where I want to end, and I'm done. Sometimes Satan slanders you to you. Man, Brother Marcus, I love this. You know what he's called? You know what one of the names Satan is called? He's called a lot of stuff. One of the names is the accuser of the brethren. You know what he's going to do to you? And I'm not trying to mess you up right now. Hope you prayed today. He'd be like, you have no business being up there. You know what you did that one time. You know what you thought while pastor was preaching. You know what happened at your house. No, look, you say, why would you say that to Brother Marcus? Because the same thing gets said to me. What business do you have standing behind that pulpit? The same thing gets said to my wife. What business do you have being a pastor's wife? Is it true, Ann? And together we have wept before God. Because we are not perfect people. Yeah, if they knew that about you, if that happened, if you're guilty, man, if the Wicklands, if Brother Robbie and Miss Marcella knew what I struggled with, and Satan will accuse you and will lie to you and convince you that you're a lost cause, that you're not worth it, that people won't care about you. I'm telling you, people that love you like Jesus aren't going to be wrecked by what you're guilty of. They just want to help you. And there's not a person that Jesus can't save, redeem, forgive, and use in his work. And I want to thank God that we have an advocate who ever lives to make intercession for us. And the greatest slander that you got to push back with in your life is the slander of the enemy telling you you're not worth it, telling you that God can't use you, telling you that your life doesn't have value, telling you that your past has to continue to be your present and your future, telling you that there's no hope for you, telling you that the opposition is too hard, telling you that nobody cares about you, telling you that God will not do a great work in you. That is slander from the enemy. You can't stop him from talking. One day, this is really good news, Jesus is going to shut him up for eternity one day. And he's going to throw away the key. My soul mourns for lost souls, but I don't mourn for that slimy snake at all. I can't stop him from talking right now. But you know what I don't have to do? Let his talking stop me. And that's not like here, keep going pile. You know what that is? I have a cross. I have a Bible. I have the Holy Ghost in me. I have people of God encouraging me. I have direct access to the throne of God so that I can obtain grace and mercy to help in time of need. And I want to encourage you, don't let the slander stop you. You can't stop the talking, but you don't have to let the talking stop you. He's a slimy snake that has been defeated. Let's bow our heads and close our eyes. So I want to ask a few questions. And I know it's a Wednesday night. I went longer than I meant to. I'm sorry. But I want to ask you some questions. How many of you would raise your hand and say, I have been hurt by slander? Raise your hands. It's all over. It hurts. How many of you feel the slander of the chief enemy? How many of you have ever felt that? You say, yeah, he tells me, talks to me. Now, this is where it gets real. Nobody look around. I actually don't even want you to raise your hands on this. I just want you to be honest in your heart. How many of you have contributed to slander? You know what I'll say? I don't want you to raise your hand, but I'll raise my hand. Some of the worst destruction that's been done to the churches of God have happened from within the church. You've been guilty of it. You've been hurt by it. And if you've been guilty of it, you need to make it right. You need to ask God to forgive you. You need to make it right with people if you need to make it right. And then you just need to keep moving and trust the grace of God. Because he does forgive and he heals and helps. I'm asking you tonight one more question. How many of you have, in areas of your life, you've allowed the voices of slander to stop you in certain seasons and in certain areas, and you've just gotten weary with it, and your hands haven't been strengthened? Would you raise your hand before the Lord and say, yes, me, yep, all, yep. So can we do this? Can we talk to the Lord about it tonight? If we need to confess, help us to confess. But what I'd love to happen is for God's people just to ask for help. You got the enemy's voice in your head. And get to the altar tonight and ask God for help. Let's stand together. Father, help us to be faithful to you. I love you. Help your people in Jesus' name. Amen. While Brother Marcus sings, you respond to the Lord.